This and the Oscars to awardsdaily.com's podcast on the Oscar race. My name is Sasha Stone. I am the founder and main content provider for awardsdaily.com, and I'm here with our editors, Jazz Tangay, Ryan Adams, and Marshall Flores, and our special guest, our good friend of the site, and somebody we've known for 30 years, Michael Gray. Welcome, Michael. It's so nice to have you back.
Thank you. I think the last time I was here was about over a year and a half ago. I think it was the last time.
Yeah.
With, what's his name?
Craig.
With Gray. Craig, yeah, exactly.
what were we talking about that year? I can't even remember. Two years ago, what would that have been? Which Oscars?
I don't know, but it's so weird to think
that. La La Land 2 years ago.
It's just weird to think that Craig ever did the podcast with us, isn't it?
I know, because actually, especially since he actually did so many with us, he did a lot of our Oscar history podcast with us. Those were, how many episodes of that did we do? Like 30 episodes of that.
Yeah, at least, and, or maybe 100. I mean, we did a lot of them.
I know it.
Well, I know I didn't do that many with you guys. I did a few, but not that many.
Yeah,
you were our special guest, our special
guest. Yeah, I was like that. Yeah. The co-star in the wings.
The co-star. he's Michael. I just a quick history for anybody who hasn't been following along. I know that Rick has out there. Hi, Rick. Everybody say hi to Rick, our best fan.
Hi, Rick.
Hello, Rick.
There's too many Ricks that I know around in the circle, so you'll have to be more specific.
Oh, this is Rick Friel.
Okay, Rick Friel. Yeah, okay, I know him. So
he loves our podcast and listens to it. So
our number one fan, definitely.
He's our number one fan, so that's really nice. But Michael and I have been friends for 30 years. We met. He was my boss at Main Street Video, which is no longer there on Santa Monica, in Santa Monica on Main Street. And Michael knew everything about the Oscars when I met him. I knew nothing about the Oscars, and he's been talking to me about. If I have a question, I always call him. Hey, Michael. How many actresses have had the most nominations without winning? They'll always know the answer. So,
do I know the answer now? Like, I'm trying to think. Who won the most Oscars? Oh, well, it's Glenn Close so far.
Oh, really? Glenn Close. What about Deborah Kerr? Six. Didn't Deborah Kerr get a whole bunch and not win?
Or? Oh, yeah. Deborah Kerr got six, and she's never won. Yeah.
Thelma Ritter also has six.
Thelma Ritter has six, too. Yeah,
and what about Amy Adams?
She has five, but she's going on six. I don't think she's going to win, but she's going on six nominations.
I don't even know. What were we talking about, Michael? What was that we were talking about?
Oh, I mentioned to Sasha that, you know, the Oscars pretty much sells itself. And so you really only twice, I think, in Oscar history have they done it without a host. And actually, the running time was a lot shorter than if they had a host. So I was telling Sasha that maybe the Oscars doesn't really need a host. It can probably survive on it. It has enough support and so much, history that it could pretty much survive without a host. A host would eliminate so much of the junk that goes in between, like the ridiculous jokes. We were mentioning that the inside jokes that we as the audience don't get. And so it's Hollywood community. They get the inside jokes a lot. We just sit there and go, I don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what they do when the host comes in. And they can have a strong voiceover voice announce the give the announcers, the winners, the nominees, the songs, all that stuff. And I think maybe without a host, the Oscar show could run a little bit more smoothly without that four-hour running time, because it's going into 3 hours and up to 4 hours. And also, the Oscar telecast itself, over the years, has lost a lot of ground. It's not the grand award show that it used to be. People really don't care much about the Oscars as much anymore. It's like it's become like any other award show. It's not special anymore.
There are so many award shows, and the Golden Globes is gained in popularity, I think. And like we have said so many times before, it's not just the Oscars that have gone down in the ratings. Everything on television has gone down on the ratings. There just aren't there's not a television audience like there used to be. And people have got to get used to that. And you got to stop thinking that the Oscars is going to get the same sort of ratings that it did 10 or 15 years ago when there was no such thing as streaming or all the other options that people have for entertainment these days.
I don't want to sit for 2.5 hours and listen to political speeches. Right. People watch the Oscars because they want to see their favorite actor and actress win awards and see their favorite films win. If people want to be schooled on politics, they would listen to the news, CNN and MSNBC and all that stuff. The Oscars should stay far away from politics because it tunes people off. And I think over the years, that's one of the reasons why the Oscars has lost interest with a lot of its television audience, because people don't want to be educated on what they already know about. People want to be entertained for 2 hours or 2.5 hours.
I have to agree with that. I think that I don't know, as much as I feel aligned with and support Meryl Streep, you know, and anybody else, I'm not sure that that's the right place to do it either. Like, I feel like, yes, they have the world stage, but by now the world stage has become divided into two distinct groups, and one group hears that side and the other group doesn't. And you're not going to reach that other group if you're standing up on stage. You're just not. They're going to tune it out.
Right.
You know?
Well, I have a similar parallel theory that's almost the same, a little bit different. I think that the people who stop watching the Oscars because of the political statements are Republicans, because the people talking about politics at the Oscars are not Republicans. And so when Michael Moore speaks out or Meryl Streep speaks out, I don't think liberals really mind hearing that for 3 or 4 minutes. I'm kind of inspired by it,
but there are a lot of people definitely don't like that.
So you're listening.
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to remind you that there are a lot of people who just aren't political at all, and that they'd also don't like it, you know.
That's true too. Yeah, that's true. I it's hard for me to conceive of that kind of person, but I know that you're right, that they do exist. I know you're absolutely right. Some people don't want to hear about politics at all. But I do, as far as the people, the winners, I think they should be allowed in their acceptance speeches certainly to say anything that they want to say, because they've only got 45 seconds anyway.
Yeah.
If somebody can't sit for 45 seconds and hear somebody speak out in defense of somebody in Iran who's in prison or something, then I think, well, then just get up and go to the bathroom or something if you can't tolerate listening to somebody speak out for a worthy cause for 45 seconds. But I do agree that for the presenters, and especially for the host, who really has a captive audience, and you've just pretty much got to sit through what the host is saying, they should not preach about politics.
Yeah, I mean,
they shouldn't even joke about it and ridicule the people who, even if most of us agree with the ridiculing.
Right, and you have to understand, like, what's your objective? Is your objective to put on a good show and have a lot of viewers, or is your objective to, you know, take a side and be part of the resistance? Well, if that's your objective, then you have to understand that you're going to take a huge hit in the ratings. And if that's okay with you, that's okay with you. But then don't come back with, you know, we're going to have to nominate every single terrible popular movie just because it's popular in order to save the Oscars. You know, I think that they have to be realistic about what they are, and what they are as a television show, where really, you know, privileged people get up on stage and accept awards, supposedly for high achievements in film. It's not always that. It's never really been that in the past. Most of the time, people tuned into the Oscars to see glamour, to see drama, to see excited people win things, and to see the movies they love honored. But really, what drove the Oscars throughout their history wasn't the quality of the films, but rather the star power, right?
Right.
So we're kind of in an era where
we've lost
star power. Like, we don't have a lot of it anymore. And every single movie star knows that in order to preserve their career, they have to be on the left. They can't be on the right or their career is over. James Woods is never going to get anywhere near the Oscar stage ever in his life. He knows that. So I'm not standing up for Republicans. I'm just saying that the awards did not used to be totally devoted to the left. They used to be, in fact, back in the day, very conservative, you know, when Bob Hope was the host.
And there were really, really well-known Republicans who were beloved by Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Stanwyck, John Wayne.
John Wayne.
And people like that.
Yeah.
But Republicans were different back then, too. Republicans weren't
exactly
as radical as they are nowadays, and they weren't we didn't feel like that they were doing so much damage to the country. It was, there was a better balance between the political parties.
Yeah.
One of the political parties was not insane like it is these days.
That's right. And it, and I agree with that. But I also think if they're going to think, and what Michael is saying is true, is that if they're, if they really want to preserve the Oscar telecast and they want that to be a show on ABC that everybody in America watches, then they really, I mean, I know it sounds bad, and you, you guys all know how passionate I am about politics, but I really do feel like, put on a show, put on an entertaining show. That's going to take you a lot farther with people who are freaked out, depressed, sad. Give them a chance to see something that's entertaining, glamorous, and fun for one night. Yeah. You know,
I didn't know that this topic was going to come up, so I'm glad that it did. And it reminds me of something I saw on Twitter just a few days ago that infuriated me when I saw it, because I don't like the guy who wrote it. But it is really pertinent to what we're talking about. Pat Sajak, you know, is an arch Republican. Pat Sajak, the host of Wheel of Fortune.
I didn't know he was a Republican.
He's an arch, yeah, he's very
conservative. Most game very, show hosts
he's
are also,
he's a radical conservative in the way that the worst of them are. He's really he's always making an ass of himself with the things that he says. They're so outrageous. And so I think he's like one of the most dickish of dick knobs, really, in my opinion. I think he's just awful. But here's what he said on December 9th on Twitter. He said, here's a quick fix for the Academy Awards show. Expand it to two nights. On the first night, give out awards and celebrate the history and wonder of movies. Then on the second night, hold your political rally. So he's saying, he's like, let's do the award show and split it up. If you want to have your political rally, do that another night and have your celebrate the wonder of movies on the night so that we can all tune in and enjoy that.
Well, put it this way. I don't think that we're ever getting back the audience that we lost because of politics. There's no way. We're a divided country, and it's going to stay divided, period. But if the Republicans like Pat Sajak are never going to watch the Oscars ever.
Right. Yeah.
They're just not. I mean, unless people were like, we love Donald Trump, is the only way that they would ever watch the Oscars. And that's never going to happen. And in fact, the Oscars would die if they ever did do that. They'd be over. That would be the end of them. But sure. I do think that there is a happy medium between not necessarily making it a show about, I mean, I do think it was a mistake. Not a mistake. They had to work through Harvey Weinstein since he's such a big part of the Oscars. They had to do it, but I mean, if you didn't know that the ratings were going to tank when everybody knew that the whole show was going to be about Me Too and all that, then you weren't, you know, you're just not living in the real world. They were going to tank. Nobody wants to hear that stuff on a public show like that. That's not what it is. You know, it's not a community meeting. It's not a it's not a political rally. It's supposed to be a night of glamour, you know, for what it is. And you can't expect it to do anything more than that, you know.
Is the Oscars...
Lose. Go ahead, Jess. I'm sorry.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, yes, but why are you sound so far away all of a sudden?
Hold on.
Why aren't you on your microphone anymore? What happened?
I'm still on my microphone.
Okay,
can you hear me now?
Better,
there we go.
Yeah. What happened, though? Right. What are you doing?
I switched to my phone.
Yeah, no, that didn't work at all. It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It's got to be a microphone.
I sound terrible?
No, not now you don't, but you did before.
Okay, not now. Yeah. Does anybody know, was the Oscars last year the number one rated show for time slot that year, last year?
I think it always wins its time slot. It always wins its time slot, I think, but just by a lot smaller margin than it used to.
Much, much smaller. Like, since Trump got elected, it's gone down every year, and last year was the worst.
Because I know somewhere I read where last year, I think it was 23 million viewers compared to the previous year. It was like 36 million viewers.
And it used to be regularly upwards of 40-something million.
Right. So it's going down all the time. And not only, and I think another reason why it's going down is, and I know Sasha and I talked about this also, we debated, it's when they went from 5, they jumped to 10 because they were ignoring sort of popular films. So they wanted to bring them in. But have they really been bringing in a lot of popular films? They're still doing what they did when they had regulated to 5. Mm. And they're not really putting in films that movie audiences really go rush to see. Like, everyone's talking about Roma. I haven't seen it yet, but I don't think Roma has any chance of winning Best Picture at all. But, you know, if it does win Best Picture, you better believe there's going to be a lot of people who are going to watch less of the Oscars the next year.
I don't think it will either.
It's not a film that the general public is going to rush to go see because it's a foreign language film.
Right. The thing about
setting aside whether or not that it's going to win or not, I do agree, Michael, with the proposition that whether or not people tune into the Oscars this year is based largely on whether they liked the Oscars last year. It doesn't matter so much about who the host is going to be or what films are nominated this year. It's they think about last year and whether or not they enjoyed the Oscars last year.
Yeah.
And if they did, they're going to tune in again.
Exactly.
If they didn't, then they're saying, that's no fun. I don't want to watch that anymore.
That's right. 100%
well,
this right.
Well, the season was one of the worst Oscar shows last year. It was one of the worst Oscar shows last year.
But see, they can't win because if they pick a movie like, a movie that's you know, not as good to win, but it's popular, then they take a lot of heat. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I know that in the past, when movies that weren't very good, all they got was no end of shit. Like, they didn't award the best movie of the year. They awarded the crappy movie. And, you know, the thing about Roma is, yes, it's not... I don't think it's going to win Best Picture because I don't think the actors are going to be behind it. So I don't think it's going to win. But as to the question of whether it is the best film of the year, it might be. I think First Man is. It's my choice for Best of the Year, but Roma might be considered artistically and cinematically the best film of the year. But and I think that people would watch it if they, you know, if they got that publicity. On the other hand, Michael, as Michael and I were talking about in this debate about popular movies, that is going to be right there the reason why they have the popular film category if Roma wins. It's going to be an argument that proves their point. Look at what the Oscars have become. They award these obscure movies that no one sees, and they ignore the movies that the whole public likes. I don't think it's going to go that way. I think that the winner is going to be a movie that everybody has seen, like maybe A Star Is Born. I can't imagine any other movie winning. I don't think it's as good enough to win, but I think that... Oh, I cut that out. But you know what I mean. Like, what movie do you guys... Can you even envision winning? Like, what movie would people say was good enough to win Best Picture? Well, I could see Black Panther winning in a certain scenario. I can see Black Klansman winning in a certain scenario. I can see A Star Is Born winning, and I can see Roma winning. Those are the ones that I
think. What about
The
Favorite? The Favorite.
No, not going to win. Mm-hmm. Zero shot.
No.
Mm-hmm. No. Green Book, maybe, but it's looking like a long shot on that, too.
Right.
Right.
So, didn't you guys say that they do the top five and then they pick the other films? So
before, for our 2 years, voters had 10 slots as the 10 nomination slots for Best Picture. But after that 2 year period, they went back to 5 slots, and then so they only pick a top five, and then but they can have. The Best Picture lineup can have between 5-10 nominees, depending on how many votes each film, a certain number of votes, or meeting a certain percentage of votes or number one votes it has. So, it's a complicated process. So, and we've been it's a Frankenstein compromise that we've had for like 7 years now. So,
I love that Frankenstein compromise. That's great.
Yes. I've been studying the hell out of this for like past 5 years. So
do any of you guys think that this year they may be 10 nominees for Best Picture?
No.
Sasha always says that since this has never happened, that it probably is not likely to happen. And I think that that's true, not likely to happen. But I do think that it is mathematically possible. But I think the math is really, really difficult. And Marshall, you know that.
Yeah, I've done a lot of simulations on the Best Picture nomination process using critics' top tens. And the way this works is there's effectively 3 rounds of voting. People rank their films like 1 through 5. And then the number one votes are really the most important part of it. Basically, and then the number two and the number threes get factored in the later rounds. But basically, a film needs around 3% of the Academy to list it as their top film of the year. And so if the distribution of votes is right, and there's about like 10 films around 2.5-3% of the Academy each backing it, then sure, that was it. Sure, there could be like 10 films, but it's after seeing what I've been seeing with like simulations and, you know, the actual results of what the Academy nominates, it's very difficult to get 10 films nominated. So
right. So it's theoretically possible to have 10, but in practice, we have seen over and over again that it's almost virtually impossible for the math to work out, because in order for there to be 3% of the voters left over, it would mean that so many of the movies that win the first through the ninth spots don't really get that much. There has to be enough left over after nine movies in order for a 10th movie to make it in, and there just rarely is. Usually those first nine slots are filled and they take up all of the number one choices, and that's that.
The only time they had 10 was 2009 and 2010, and since 2011 it's just been five choices for Academy members, so you don't get animated films and you don't get
So those top five are the films that basically have the shot of winning compared to the remaining three or four.
That's right.
And the way that we determine which five those are going to be, we usually look for a director pairing there has to be substantial support in the other top categories in order for those top five to be the top five. And one of the biggest indicators for that is that get a best director of a nomination associated with your best
or screenplay or editing. So yeah, I mean, we don't know what the vote totals are. We could see like total nominations and nominations in key categories.
But really what you're looking for you're really looking for DGA nominations, even more than you're looking for best director, because DGA determined that Ben Affleck would win Best Picture for Argo, even though he wasn't nominated for Best Director. So DGA will tell you which are the top five. And in Best Director Oscar, you're going to get probably one of the five from DGA that won't make it over. Like, for instance, Peter Farrelly is probably going to get a DGA nomination, but he might be replaced by someone else for the Oscars, you know? So you got to watch that. Watch the DGA. That's 15,000 people voting. That's a big, big number. Bigger than anything we've seen so far. The most we've seen is the SAG nominating committee with 2,000, and they went popular mostly. But you can also judge by the Globe director is also very reliable in that way. The last film to win without a Globe was Crash. So while it's not totally ironclad, it's a pretty good indicator of what films are headed to the race. So for Globe, we have Bradley Cooper, Alfonso Cuarón, Spike Lee, Peter Farrelly, and who is the fifth? Somebody help me here. Come on
that's
now.
Say really, but I mean.
Oh my gosh.
Who are we forgetting, you guys?
Adam McKay
for Vice. Yeah, and Vice. Yeah, Vice isn't winning Best Picture, but. So those are the five from Globe, right? So now if the DGA five matches those, you know those are the five that you have to figure out which of those is going to win Best Picture. And then factor in the SAG where Black Klansman got a DGA and a SAG Ensemble. So did Star Is Born.
Star Is Born.
And that's it, right? Only two.
Yeah.
So it...
So the DGA... nominations came out?
Not yet. We don't know what those are going to do, but going by what we've seen so far, the two films that have the best shot of winning Best Picture would be Black Klansman and A Star Is Born. Just by what we know about... Well, I'm just saying, just by what we know about the stats, that's what it's telling me.
Right.
Unless we're looking at a year where something is really off, you know?
Yeah, especially Star Is Born hasn't missed anything, really, so...
Star Is Born hasn't missed, but the SAG, we know the SAG is an ironclad because The Shape of Water just won last year without a SAG ensemble, so it's not a deal-breaker, but the Globe director is a pretty hardcore ironclad stat. So I would say if you want to really be right about Best Picture, you go on that Globe director five, and you look at that, and you say, okay, which of these can win?
You know, they used to say that the Golden Globes was the precursor to the Oscars. But wouldn't that be the SAG now?
Mm.
In a,
I think the SAG is suddenly less indicative because the SAG is actually, I hate to say that they have, I think they're less important because they are less reliable because, and is because of AFTRA, because of including AFTRA in their membership.
Right.
That's not representative of Hollywood people at all.
No.
So they have the, to have voters in Omaha, Nebraska work at a radio station or the TV weather station, that's not indicative of the way people in Hollywood are going to vote.
With Green Book, okay, they're pushing for Viggo for Best Actor. Well, he and I can't never think of this guy's name. Technically, he's a lead too, but I guess they're going to put him in a category which they feel he has a better chance of winning.
Here's how I explained that to somebody. I explained it this way. Someone wrote me that, and I said, look, the thing is the story never leaves Viggo's point of view until the very end. Like, it always follows his point of view. It follows him into the hotel room. It follows him when he gets a phone call at the police station. It follows him all the way to the very end where Mahershala Ali is in his apartment. But for the entire movie, it's from Viggo's point of view. So I think it's fair to say he's the lead. You could make it a co-lead with Ali, but I think that... they know if they do that, there's a really good chance that they could cancel each other out.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think that the character who has the most important character arc is Viggo's character.
Yeah,
because
he
goes the most change. And we don't see a lot of movies anymore where when there are two almost co-equal leads, where the white guy takes precedence, but we do have that this year with Green Book. Mm-hmm. It's not really a cool thing to do anymore, but they did it.
Right.
And so that's the way it is. And it does seem like that the story itself is more based on the recollections of
Tony Lip's dad.
Viggo's character's family's recollections, his son's memoirs, right?
Oh, for sure. And it's like in their family, it's like the coolest thing that ever happened to them was that this happened, that the dad got to drive across country with, and it's a really cool story. So you think, how do you tell that story? How do you tell that story and make it authentic? How do you tell that story with a black character and have that story be okay and authentic and seem real and not, all these other kind of ways that people say it's a trope and...
Yeah, and I feel sure that that's part of the reason why Shirley's family feels slighted and feels like the movie is unfair to him because they wanted the movie to be obviously about their relative, and it's not so much. It's not told from his point of view as much, and so I think there's some resentment there. And plus, as Sasha, as you have brought up, it seems like that some of the members of his family who are complaining about the movie have not even seen the movie.
Yeah,
also the fact that there's some rumors of estrangement between him and his family, and so we don't know what kind of family dynamic is going on there. That what sort of resentments exist between him and his own family.
Star is Born is probably going to win. Just the more people I speak to, the more people, it's growing on people. Like, they're watching it the second time and they love it. So that's just one thing. Green Book, I loved that. I think Viggo is superb and Mahershala is brilliant. But as you say, like, it is Tony's story the whole time, right? So, but it's one of those movies, and I think we've discussed it before, that I can tell everybody to watch. It's a safe movie. Like, that, there's nobody having an overdose in it. It's not. Mm-hmm. I would love to tell people to watch Roma, but I know, my in-laws might not sit down and watch a film in Spanish, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but Sasha, you wrote that in your predictions piece earlier this week about screeners. Like, what are we going to sit down and watch? I took Vice, I've taken, I've got First Man. I can't bring Roma because I know that, people will get bored. I don't know what everybody else.
It's not the kind of movie that Americans are used to seeing in so many ways.
It's sad.
Sad. It's the pacing is different. It's deliberately paced. It seems as if you wonder where it's going. a lot of the climactic, most brilliant, fascinating pieces don't really happen until the very end of the movie. And even from the opening credits, those opening credits, I mean, to me, help lull you into the mood and the pacing and the style of the movie just by focusing on the pavement and the water washing across the tiles. But that goes on for like 4 minutes. And I mean, a lot of people are going to not even make it through the credits of that movie, I'm afraid. Because they're thinking, what are we watching here?
I'm having a hard time with you guys, with Jazz and with Ryan, your guys. Am I the only one that's hearing them cutting out?
I'm hearing some cutouts too. I don't know if it's
I might need to change my to 5G and see if that helps. So hang on.
You should always keep it on 5G.
No, I know, but it just automatically signs itself on to 2G. But let me just try to put it on 5G and see if that helps. If it cuts you guys off, I'll call you right back, okay? Hang on a second. Let me find it here. Hang on. Sorry. 5G. Where is it? Here we go. Okay, it's going. You still there? Hello?
That's clear.
Are you guys back?
I'm here.
I'm here.
I'm here.
Okay, I hope that helps a little bit better. Michael, are you there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry about that, you guys. And you guys, Ryan and Jazz.
That's all right. Yeah, my modem wants to revert to sometimes too. There's a way to disable 2G. You don't need it anymore, and if you know, it's not really necessary. But I haven't figured out how to disable it on my own modem, and so. But you can do that.
Well, it depends on devices, because if you have smart devices like a smart outlet or something, they usually just want to stick on 2G. So I wouldn't really recommend that, actually. Oh. But although it's a pain, I do agree it's a pain in the rear if you have a 5G connection available, but it defaults to 2G.
Yeah.
Right.
I just feel bad because Jazz, you and Ryan had such a good exchange, but it was like, it's going to be tough editing that to make it sound like it's okay because of the way that the things were. So if you want to just go back quickly and say what you said, Ryan, about Green Book, and Jazz, what you said about screeners, then just repeat it, and then I can have it on clearer if that's okay with you guys.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I forget what happened.
Go ahead, Jazz.
Okay.
You're talking about Green Book.
So I was saying, here's what Green Book is the one film that you can safely recommend to people. Like, I can sit down and watch that with my family. And Sasha, you wrote about it, right? Like, what are we all going to sit down and watch over the next couple of days? We've got like a pile of screeners. I'm going to bring First Man, safe movie. Yes, people are going to cry. I'm going to bring Vice. Again, you know, Christian Bale is superb. Green Book, I'm going to bring. Roma, I can't sit, you know, my mother-in-law down to watch that. She can watch the opera. She can't watch. I'm going to have to sit down. I love her. She's a darling. I'm going to have to sit down and pause it every 2 minutes, and it's going to turn into like a 10-hour viewing session.
Right.
Because you lose the whole experience of the movie because of that.
If you pause Roma, you'll lose it. You'll lose track of it. You've got to really stay attentive to it and get into the rhythm of it. And if you disturb the rhythm more than what it's already, how unaccustomed it already is to for most people, then you're really going to blow it apart. I mean, it's not the kind of movie you can pause and come back to.
Right. And I can bring Bohemian Raps. 2 hours? 2:10?
Yeah, it's a little over 2 hours, I think. And also about a Green Book, aesthetically, it is the most familiar and accessible movie, I think, of any of this year's nominees, because it has that kind of friendly style that people are accustomed to their entire lives. It's the kind of movie that it could have been made 10 years ago or 15 years ago or even 20, stylistically. It's like, in that way, it's like The Help, and it's like movies like that. It's well lit. It's colorful. It's the narrative through line is easy to follow, which is everything that Roma is not. As much as I admire Roma, and it's probably going to end up being my number one favorite movie of the year, I can understand how a lot of people are just so unaccustomed to seeing that kind of movie, not only because it's foreign and in black and white, but just because of the stylistic and aesthetic choices that were made, and the pacing and everything is it's going to be hard for people to follow and feel like that they know what to expect from it.
Right.
So pretty much Green Book is more of a safe film. It's very safe.
It pleases the greatest number of people, I think.
It's sort of like Rain Man, and it's like that.
Yeah,
it's like Rain Man. The only foreign film that I mean, I like foreign films. I've seen many of them. But when it came to the Oscars, the only one that really became very that the audiences really went for was, I guess, more than 10 years ago, was Crouching Tiger. Mm-hmm. That was the only one because that already had a built-in audience with the martial arts thing and stuff like that. So people who went to see the film in droves, they can bypass the subtitles because they went in for the action and the movie it captured that audience. People who don't even like foreign language films went to go see that movie. That's one of the few foreign language films that did extremely well with movie audiences, American movie audiences, because of this thing.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
I haven't seen Roma because I've seen the previews and it just doesn't attract me. I'm just not attracted to it. There's something about it that I just I'm not drawn to it. I will probably see it anyway, but I don't think people are going to sit down and for 2 hours and watch a subtitled film. That's why it's going to get nominated in both categories, foreign language and best picture. It's probably going to win in foreign language.
The one thing Roma has going for it is as far as Netflix goes, is that I was listening to somebody from Netflix talking on an interview, and they were saying how big their international audience is and how their international audience is almost more profitable than their American audience. And if you watch a lot of Netflix, you know that a lot of their shows are subtitled. So I feel like people are getting used to that, and that, you know, the irony is people were arguing about Roma being seen in a theater and really kind of criticizing Netflix. But the truth is that Netflix is doing more to bring foreign language films and television shows to audiences than anything American mainstream media has ever done. And I think that that helps them to want to watch Roma and to be more comfortable with it, because so many people watch the crime shows that are subtitled and the foreign films that come in. There's so many of them if you go on Netflix, and they're all really popular, you know?
And the submenus on Netflix are so easy to navigate. You can, with just a click of the remote control, you can find 7 different types of subtitles, 7 different languages. And you can even find, for some movies, you can even find 4 or 5 different dubbings.
Yeah, if you want to dub it, you can
choose the dubbing option. And plus, another thing about Roma is just accessible because it's right there. You might not look online if you're going to rent a movie or buy a movie, or even if you're going to go to the theater and see a movie. You might think, I'm not going to take a chance on that movie by renting it going to the theater. But if it's right here on my television, I can click on it and see what it's like and see if I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to do that because you have that accessibility factor.
Was Roma on Netflix first and then it went to the theater?
No.
Opposite. No, it was in theaters 2 or 3 weeks, I think, before it went to streaming.
So Netflix, what was the first, last year was the first Netflix film that got nominated for an Oscar or something like that?
Not
something
for Best Picture,
Mudbound.
Mudbound didn't get in for Best Picture, though.
But it got Oscar nominated, though.
It got Oscar nominated, but not Best Picture. So far, if Roma gets in, it'll be the first Netflix movie to be nominated. And you know what? That's a really big get for them. It's bigger than they ever could have hoped for. They don't even need to win. They just want to be nominated. That brings them gives them a seat at the table. You know,
especially since it's not going to be just the one nomination. We expect it to probably be nominated in 4, 5, 6 categories, right? Probably, I'm guessing. Well, so that's going to look good. That's going to look good. 6 seconds.
Anyway. Do you think Alfonso Cuarón has a chance of winning Best Director?
Yeah.
I think almost he could easily win it. Yeah. I think even if it doesn't win Best Picture.
The only person that can take it away from him, I think, is Spike. Spike Lee might win for Black Klansman, which I think would be great. And Alfonso Cuarón already has an Oscar. Spike Lee's been at this.
He has 2 Oscars for editing and director for Gravity.
Yeah, so there you go. And Spike doesn't have any Oscars. And he...
Well, Corian has two Best Director Oscars.
No, only one.
No, didn't he win for the one with Leonardo DiCaprio?
That's
the other Three Amigos.
That's Iñárritu. So Iñárritu's one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He has two.
Guillermo del Toro is one, and Alfonso Cuarón is one. The only American actor that has won since, or director that's won since, the American-born director to win since 2009 is Damien Chazelle for La La Land. Every other one has been born out of a foreign country, which I find so interesting. I know everybody thinks like, oh, she's xenophobic, but it's not true. It's just I'm wondering why isn't America producing the kind of directors that make like the best films of the year that win that prize.
All right, why aren't they nurturing those directors and why aren't they giving them the projects that are the right projects to score with Oscar voters? And it's just you wonder what it is about why American cinema has fallen down on the and producing Oscar winning filmmakers. Interestingly enough, when you talk about the directors that have won in the past 10 years, Americans, we were talking, and going back to ratings, let me see if I can pull that up real quick. Yeah, I'm looking at the ratings since 2013 when Argo was nominated. That year, there were 40 million viewers. The year after that, see, since Argo was a really popular year for viewers, because not only did we have Argo, but we had Silver Linings Playbook, we had Django Unchained, we had Life of Pi, a lot of really, and even Les Miserables, a lot of really popular movies were nominated that year. And so everyone had a really good experience at the 2013 Oscars. And so they tuned in the following year. Like I said, you base whether or not you're going to watch the Oscars on whether you had a good time last year. And so the following year, the Oscars... Actually, the ratings went up to 43 million. But that was the year that 12 Years a Slave won. And ever since then, we had 12 Years a Slave, we had Spotlight, we had Birdman, Moonlight. All of those movies, almost very few people went to see those movies. They're really low box office movies. And every year since then, the ratings have declined. It actually went up after Argo, is what I'm saying. But then when 12 Years a Slave won, a lot of people who just are not going to like that kind of movie for various really wrong reasons, stopped watching the Oscars in 2012. And since then, there's been a decline of about 5 million viewers every single year.
Yeah.
So it's been 45, 40, 35, 30 now.
Yeah. And I really don't think politics has helped. I don't think the divisive politics, pitting Hollywood against Trump and all of his supporters has helped. I think that's created a huge divide. And I don't think anybody, just like they didn't want to go see First Man, they're not going to watch the Oscars because Trump has turned it into a partisan thing. That if you're watching the Oscars, you're a snowflake, you're a liberal, and you know they all hate
as
me.
As Hollywood can take for being critical of Trump. Trump is even more to blame for rallying his cult and making them believe that Hollywood is the enemy, the enemy of the people, and that anybody who watches Hollywood movies or watches the Oscars, you're traitors to Trump.
Yeah,
is the way he's and they believe that.
Yes, absolutely.
I think. Sorry, Sasha.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Yes.
No, I think this year. Like, there's probably going to be an increase in viewership because of two things. Like, if Black Panther is nominated, like, you know, popular film, but also the Gaga factor. Like, I feel like they're going to, like, her fans are going to tune in to see not just the red carpet, but to see her perform Shallow and maybe to see her win. Like, I feel like those two things, if Black Panther did get nominated for Best Picture, and Gaga's performance, I feel those could have an effect on viewerships. That'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, but didn't Gaga perform when with Joe Biden at the Oscars? And they did that whole big thing. I mean, I know it was dampened by the whole Me Too thing, but she was there. You know, she was performing her song, and it was a really big deal that Gaga was there, and it didn't have any impact at all. And she didn't even win. Like Sean Smith or Sam Smith or one of those guys was like, she didn't even effing win. It was so disappointing. It was so good. If you were there that night and you watched all the performances, gosh. And she was so amazing. And then for have her
you
not
were
win.
There that night is what you're saying. You were there that night, and so you saw and you felt the energy in the room, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And but I can't remember whether or not I was that aware that she was going to be performing in advance, though. They could have made much more of a publicity deal about that I don't really remembering it registering with me that she was going to be featured.
Well, here's the thing. Star is Born is really popular in the red states. It's popular all over the country. So, you know, they're going to have to really figure out their loyalties at that point. You know, am I so in love with this movie that I'm going to watch the Oscars, or am I so in hatred that I won't even bother watching them? I'll just watch the clips on YouTube tomorrow. And the thing is the Oscars are coming in the middle of such huge upheaval and change. While I think it's true that Black Panther might bring in audiences, I also think it's equally true that Kevin Hart's, the controversy around Kevin Hart is going to have alienated a lot of viewers. You know, a lot of people are really mad about that. If you look at the poll, it's split right down the middle. It's only a tiny bit of people the majority of people think it's wrong that anybody would go through old tweets. That was like by almost a margin of, a huge margin of people thought it was ridiculous. So I don't know how that's all going to play out and if it's going to impact the awards or not. I just don't know. But I do think we have to go by the theory that more popular movies are going to bring in more viewers. And I think they were hoping that they could take that and take a popular host and really boost their ratings high. I don't know if it's going to work. I just don't know,
When the Oscars switched from 5 to 10, they did it because of popular films. And now all of a sudden, they're going back on what they intended in the first place. So, mm-hmm. I know Sasha says that there won't be, like, Sasha was saying, we were talking about Black Panther, Mary Poppins, and what's the other film? They're all Disney films. So 3 Disney films won't get in for Best Picture.
Well, there's two. Are there three? I think there's only Black Panther and Mary Poppins are the only two.
Okay. Mm. You said that two of them will either split. Like, I know that a lot of people still don't think Black Panther will get in. I think it will get in. I really do. I think it will get in for Best Picture and probably Mary Poppins too. I mean, one studio has had two big Best Pictures from the same studio go in before. When it was 5, that happened a lot. It's kind of frustrating when Hollywood has this thing about popular films, because there are some great 4-star, 5-star films that are popular that just don't get the respect. It's like, why do we always have to wait towards the end of the year all the time to pick a film that's going to win Best Picture? I remember when Silence of the Lambs won, that premiered in February of that year, and it stayed throughout, and it ended up winning. Even though it was on video at the time of it won.
Right.
Yeah.
That is really a different era, though. That's a very, very different era than what we're in now.
I'm aware of that. Back then,
we didn't have the most popular, the 10 most popular films of the year were not 5 Marvel films. Back then, and that's the way it is now. Really, seriously, among the 10 most popular box office movies of the year, you've got 5 superhero movies, and that's the way that it is. And that didn't exist back then.
But see,
when
we have to come to terms with the fact that Mary Poppins is a remake, they say it's a sequel, but everybody thinks of it like a remake. And Black Panther is a Marvel movie. And the thing is, yes, they're probably going to nominate Black Panther. It's going to take a village to do it, but they probably will. But I don't really see how they do both of those movies. I don't, personally, because each of them has to get like 300 number one votes. Black Panther seems to have the edge because there are a lot of people in the Academy that are going to vote for Black Panther as number one who aren't in Disney. But the Disney block, they have to choose between Black Panther and Mary Poppins. And they're not going to pick, if they split up their vote, they have no power. So they have to vote as like a block. And I suspect that of those two, Black Panther is the better shot. I could be wrong, but you have to do the math. Look at how many films you think are in. Well, we have A Star is Born. We have Roma. We have Green Book. We have The Favorite. We have Vice, maybe. We have Black Klansman. That's six. Okay, so now we're heading into the next three. What are the next three going to be? Let me just look really fast on awardsdaily.com to see what movies we might have on our contender tracker. Okay, If Beale Street Could Talk, after seeing that, I'm not sure it gets in. Bohemian Rhapsody, I think, will get in. So I would put that at number seven. And so then you've got two more, and it's possible it could be Black Panther and Mary Poppins. It's definitely possible. I hope it's First Man bumps one of those. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it won't. But if Beale Street Could...
I never go for... I remember, Sasha, you had mentioned, never go for the film that is a sure bet. Like La La Land, everyone thought that was a sure bet to win and ended up not winning. I'm not going on this. I know everyone has a sure bet that it's going to be A Star Is Born, but the film like A Star Is Born could have a severe backlash to not win.
Right, right. I don't know if it'll win.
So I never really go for the sure bet.
I mean, for me, it's easier to talk about what's going to win than what's going to be nominated, because just as I was talking to you guys, like, I have no idea what those last. I know what the top five are, but I really do feel like Black Klansman is coming on really strong. I don't know what that means in terms of Black Klansman versus Black Panther. I don't know what that will do in the end. There's so many different influences this year that are affecting the race. One is nobody wants the popular film category, so they want to support popular movies. That's what you saw at the SAG. We have an unprecedented number of films by Black directors in the race, you know, that are like, we have Black Panther, we have Black Klansman, we have If Beale Street Could Talk, we have Sorry to Bother You, we have, you know, The Hate U Give. I don't know how that's going to work out in terms of the Oscars. I don't know where people are going to put their support. We have all these films by women directors that are totally being ignored because critics can't seem to rally around one name. They have all these different names they keep throwing up. No, we like this person. No, we like that person. So that's not working out. And then on top of all of that, we have this idea of the movie that wins has to save the Oscars. And everybody's going to know that going in. So what does that mean? How are their votes going to go? I mean, I feel like we just don't know until we start to see the next nominations come up and what resonates with people, you know.
I was just going to say that
the actors obviously like A Star Is Born, and they like Black Klansman, and they like Black Panther. Those are pretty strong bets. What else do they like? I don't know. What are the producers like? Well, the producers are going to love Black Panther. Are they going to love it enough to give it a win? Are they going to give their win to Star Is Born? They might. Are they going to give it to Black Klansman? You know, what's going to win the Producers Guild? That's what you have to ask yourself. Is it Roma? What's going to win the Directors Guild? You know, who's going to win that? And then you're going to start to piece together where you think this race is going. And I don't know. I really don't. I don't know how it's going to go.
To say which, if we name the 9 or 10 movies that we think are going to be nominated for Best Picture, it's a lot easier to name the 6 or 7 that can't win than it is to decide which of the top 3 or 4 will win. I think there are a top 3 or 4, probably Black Klansman, Star Is Born, Green Book, and Roma, I would think. I mean, I still have my, you know, hopes that Roma could do it, but I'm just not sure. And I guess then Black Panther would be the fifth most likely. I'm not really seeing Black Panther winning Best Picture myself. I love it, and it was great, and I realize its historical importance, and I think it's going to be amazingly, and it's a milestone if it gets nominated, but I don't really see it winning.
Yeah, you've got to figure what's going to get a director and a writing. What's going to get screenplay? What's going to get director nominations? Sure, it can win without screenplay. It's true. Anything can happen in a wild card race. You know, you don't know for sure. But in general, you want at least writing and directing, and then hopefully some acting, right? Black Panther didn't get either of those at the Globes, though it did get picture, and that might repeat at the Oscars. So you're going to see a Best Picture and a lot of crafts, but you're not going to see director, you're not going to see writer. Well, that just cross it off the list. It can't win Best Picture if that's the case. You know, follow the directors, follow the writers.
It will get a ton of technical awards.
Yeah, and I probably think, win a bunch of those.
Yeah, and win a bunch in those categories. I think mm-hmm. that's what's going to happen. It may just get Best Picture and then sweep with nominations and all the technical awards.
Yeah, and then win, like, you know...
Maybe two or three.
Yeah, maybe something. Like score, maybe maybe cinematography for Rachel Morrison, maybe... I mean, it'd be hard. It's a hard imagine that it would beat Roma, but it might. And then it could
visual effects. It could win too.
It could win absolutely. Effects. Probably will win visual effects. It will win everywhere it can win. In terms of costumes, it has to go up against Mary Poppins, and that's tough. But
it could.
Black Panther's costumes were great.
Yeah.
They are, really. I mean, Black Panther could do what Mad Max Fury Road did.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Win 5 or 6 technical awards and then fail to really strike with the big ones.
Yeah.
As far as, Michael, what you were saying a little while ago about 4-star movies that made a lot of money, it's hard for me to think of that many in the past few years. Gravity, Life of Pi, those are movies that I would call 4-star movies as far as brilliant masterpieces that also made a boatload of money, but there aren't a lot of movies that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4-star movies that we have this year would be Black Klansman, Roma, and Beale Street Could Talk. And those are not going to be moneymaker. Those are not going to be among the top money making movies of the year.
Right. Right.
So this year we don't have any of those movies that are both 4-star movies and blockbusters. We just don't have any.
So you don't think Star is Born is a 4-star movie?
No. I don't think it's.
I don't either, but a lot of people do. A lot of people do.
Well, Sasha and I were talking, and I said to her, the most interesting character in that movie, who should have been in there, had a longer part, was the drag queen in the beginning. Because
yeah.
The drag queen had so much more chemistry with the Bradley Cooper character that it would have been a very interesting Star is Born.
Yeah.
If he had focused his energy on making that person a big star, I would have loved this movie, because Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, in my opinion, had no chemistry. But when he's singing and that drag queen is looking at him, you saw a connection between the two of them more than I've ever seen between Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And I was saying to myself, and I told Sasha, that would have been a more interesting Star is Born if it had that twist of the drag.
I mean, I would love it if they played with any kind of convention. Like, I would have loved it if Bradley Cooper had lived at the end. That would have made me so happy. It would have made the whole movie or anything but the same old story. You know, why would you remake this movie and then just tell the same story?
Right.
You know, she's great, though. I mean, no doubt. Lady Gaga's great. The first half is amazing. It's fun to watch her. She's fantastic in the singing. All that stuff works, you know. Second half, not so much.
Yeah, if a movie's going to only give me half of a movie that I'm going to like, I want it to be the second half. If a movie falls apart in the second half, I can't abide that. I can abide a movie that has a weak beginning, but then all comes together in the end. That's much more easy to accept for me, but that's not the case with The Star is Born.
No.
That's why Roma, although it gets off to a very leisurely a pace, by the end of it, it's gripping and just riveting, right? But the scenes at the end of Roma, it just elevates it beyond.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, all the same, like, our opinions, Jazz is likes it better, I think, than any of us. But I think that it's really beloved, you know, like, a lot of my friends just love A Star is Born, just love it. So they don't see the same problems. My daughter.
For sure. I mean, just on the base, we know that on the basis of its box office alone, how much is it? It's going to be close to 200 million domestic, right?
It's almost there. Yeah, it's just 1 million away from 200.
I have forgotten, Jazz, that you. I mean, I don't mean to run it down. I mean, it's fine. All I really said was I don't think it's a 4-star movie for me. I mean, but I mean, I know a lot of people are really like it a lot, and I like a lot parts of it a lot.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people who said, you know, as I said, I loved it, and they're like, no, I didn't like it, and for various reasons, a lot of them didn't like the second half.
Sorry.
Oh.
Go ahead, stupid.
So, yeah, it was all for the second, you know, they didn't like it for the second half. They didn't like, you know, what happens to her character, like the fact that, you know, she had him to rely on him to make all those decisions.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, everybody's said, the people who don't like the film, those are the reasons. Like, I think everybody's got that same, they're all gravitating to the same reason, or they just didn't like the ending as well, like the way he had ended his life.
I forgot what your three or four top movies of the year are and how you rank them. Have you arrived at
that? Have I decided yet? I think Black Panther, Black Klansman is my number one film of the year. I think I just did like a crazy mix. That is my number one. It's my favorite. It's also the best film of the year.
Yeah.
The rest, I'm still deciding. I haven't decided yet. I'm going to do a second or third viewing of a lot, but yeah, nothing can top.
We all agree about Black Klansman that we don't have to feel strange about how we feel about Black Klansman because we all love it so much. That's great.
I mean, nothing can top the excellency of that film. I mean,
and I'm totally down with that being the big winner. Nothing would make me happier than if Spike Lee and Black Klansman won. I think, Michael, you've always said how much you like it.
Oh, I loved it. I hope it has a chance of winning. I would be happy if that film won. I would love to see Black Panther win, but I don't think it's going to. But Black Klansman, definitely. I have not seen Roma, so I'm going to have to check that out. Green Book, it's a great film, but it kind of falls in that sort of Driving Miss Daisy kind of way for me. Mm-hmm. But I love the performances. I hope Mahershala, I can't say that guy's name in my life.
Mahershala Ali.
I think he might be the front runner for best supporting actor for me. So, right. But I agree with Jazz. I think Black Klansman, that would be my top to win. And Spike Lee, because Spike Lee's been around for so long.
Give him the Oscar, man. Finally.
Yeah, give him an Oscar. Give him. He's like the Glenn Close of directors.
I know.
He's overdue. He's overdue.
Think of how influential he is. I know. Yeah, he's a giant.
He's made some tremendous films. What's that?
I'm saying he's a giant in American cinema.
Yeah, and he's made some incredible films. He's made his mark. Give it to him. It's about time that a Black director finally wins an Oscar. It's about time. And I think he would probably be the one that has the closest shot of winning. The Academy cannot continually not give it to a person of color. They have to start, they're going to have to start giving it to someone who is, he's like the Steven Spielberg.
No, he's amazing. I mean, I bet you if you talk to any of the Black directors in the race this year and talk about what Spike Lee has meant to them, what kind of pioneer he was, you know, back when, you know, nobody would dare have done what Spike Lee did back in the day with Do the Right Thing, which was so amazing. I really think he scared everybody with that movie. And yes, two films by Black directors have won Best Picture, Moonlight and 12 Years a Slave, but they've still never given. Now, people of color have won. Right? Ang Lee won, and the Three Amigos have collected all the Oscars in the last 10 years. Directors.
I mean, of color, but I mean a Black person.
That's African American.
Black person.
Yeah, you're right. But I hate
the splitting. You know, it's like, you know, like they split those awards, though, back in the, you know, with, you know, they win, like lately, they've been director wins, but the picture doesn't. But the guy wins best director. It was like that. It was like that last year. They split. And that wasn't it the year prior. They did it again. They split best director.
Oh, just a clarification. They didn't split the top two last year. Shape of Water won both.
Just
for that. Not Shape of Water. I meant the previous year.
Before that.
La La Land and Moonlight. Yeah.
12 Years a Slave.
Birdman, yeah, 12 Minutes a Slave. They split.
I agree with you. I prefer when they give it to the same, but they made the preferential ballot and Best Picture such a weird way to tabulate a win that because they have to, because they have more nominees. So it's always hard to predict what's going to win Best Picture, and I won't be able to really predict it. Marshall and I were like tabulating the poll that we did. And didn't Shape of Water do pretty well in our poll? We were surprised, right? But
yes. Yeah, Shape of Water, like, as it won a couple of, like, the times we did our little study last year.
We just kept rejecting it. Like, it was like, no, it can't win. But it definitely could and did. Yeah. So I'm going to wait and see on what's going to win Best Picture. But I really do, I think that either Alfonso Cuarón or Spike Lee, both of them would be really good candidates to win, I think, Best Director. And I hope it goes to Spike.
Well, you guys.
You got to go. All right.
Take part in this, but I have to mosey on down.
All right. It was nice talking with you, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
I'm glad I did.
Nice seeing you. Nice seeing you again, Ryan.
Bye, Michael.
Marshall, nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you too.
And Jazz, I hope to see you again.
Likewise. Take care. Have a great one.
You guys have fun. Take care.
Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Life is a teacher, time is a healer, and I'm a believer.
Thanks for listening to all this and the Oscars 2 awardsdaily.com's podcast on the Oscar race. This has been a joint episode that has two parts. This was part one with Ryan Adams, Marshall Flores, Jazz Tangay, and me, Sasha Stone, and our special guest, Michael Gray. Part two picks up with just me and Ryan and Marshall and Jazz at the very beginning. And it's a kind of a longer conversation about movies and the Oscar race. And you can listen to both if you'd like. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Ticking and moving, then passes by. But if you're lucky, it will be kind, like a river flowing through time. Like a river, let it wash it clean. Like a river, going upstream.